Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Anthony Arnoldi, Director of the Office of Information and Resource Management and Chief Human Capital Officer at the National Science Foundation. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Sally Thomas. Anthony, like most organizations, workforce planning must be critical in helping your agency's leadership draw a clear picture of the nature of the current and future human capital decisions. Could you tell us a bit about your efforts to enhance and institutionalize, perhaps, workforce planning within the foundation?
Certainly. There's been quite a lot of activity around this in the last 2 years. As I mentioned before, our Human Capital Strategic Plan also includes a workforce plan as well as a succession plan, and those were recently updated to more closely align with the NSF Strategic Plan. We assembled a group of senior executives from across the foundation who led that effort and drafted a plan that was distributed to all NSF staff for comment, another example of the highly participatory nature. Even after the plan was developed, and we did this with the strategic plan as well, it was posted for comment for about 3 weeks for each and every one of the employees to provide feedback, and we did make changes as a result of that. That's somewhat of an aside, but in any case, the workforce plan itself identifies the steps to align our workforce with our current and projected work requirements. Each year, the Division of Human Resource Management facilitates a workforce planning process with NSF senior management that results in an updated set of goals, priorities, and action strategies for workforce and staffing planning across the foundation. This structured process has focused management efforts on strategic workforce planning, and I would say that's for the first time in many years at the foundation. At the same time, we've implemented a biannual staffing planning process with each directorate and office that focuses specifically on developing work unit staffing plans. The staffing planning process encourages directorates and offices to align their staffing strategies to the overall workforce plan.
So, Anthony, you mentioned succession planning. What are some of the efforts at NSF to ensure continuity of leadership through succession planning and executive development? Specifically, what changes are you perhaps making to the recruitment process that enable you to use flexible compensation strategies to attract and retain employees in some of the mission-critical areas?
The goal of our succession planning activities is to ensure a seamless transition in all of our executive leadership positions. We strive to enable continuity of business operations and to preserve critical organizational knowledge. Finally, we want to develop and nurture a cadre of executives that can lead the agency into the future. Some of our implementation strategies aim to broaden and deepen NSF's leadership pipeline through the implementation of a comprehensive leadership development program, to prepare leadership transition plans for all executive positions, and last but not least, to establish a comprehensive knowledge management and transfer strategy for all of our executive leadership positions. Regarding our recruiting strategies, we use two principal avenues to hire staff. The first is the National Science Foundation Act of 1950 that authorized the creation of the agency and also authorizes us to appoint scientists and engineers without competition under the accepted service authority unique to our agency. This appointing authority provides us with the necessary flexibility to fill these mission-critical occupations. Compensation for these scientists and engineers is set within pay bands, and the use of additional incentives can also be authorized. Our administrative staff is hired using the same appointing and compensation rules as other agencies in the executive branch. There are similarities in the recruiting processes for both of these groups, and we've made substantial efforts to simplify the process, to leverage technology, and to look for ways to streamline the process. For example, we post our job information on both NSF.gov and USA Jobs. To the extent that there are individuals who are specifically looking for NSF opportunities, they would obviously find those on our website. And there are other individuals who may be seeking opportunities from NSF along with many other alternatives. We've also adapted our recruiting processes to the needs and expectations of our key target applicant groups. For our professional, scientific, and engineering community, we use a streamlined application process, and these applicants may submit resumes that are much more in line with the types of CVs typically used in those professional communities. We also have extensive outreach efforts to the various scientific communities through what we call Dear Colleague Letters, which solicit interest in our vacancies by contacting presidents of universities and chancellors who might know of worthy candidates who would be interested in an opportunity at NSF. Last but not least, word of mouth is an extremely important tool in filling these positions. We turn over about 30% of our scientific workforce each year by design, and it's key for us, for those individuals, when they return to their home institutions, to have had a positive experience and therefore be in a great position to recommend the next wave of individuals to serve the country by working at NSF.
That's great. It sounds like you're making it easier not only for the applicant but as well as the managers within the organization who are seeking these candidates.
Anthony, given NSF's mission, you seem to rely on a continual and transparent exchange between the broader science community and the foundation itself. Could you tell us how federal managers can effectively manage an ever-increasing blended workforce composed of contractors and federal workers, and what are some of the key differences intrinsic to these core groups?
Our success in engaging the science community is in large part because we interact with them regularly and rely on them heavily to perform many key business functions of the foundation. We not only recruit them for key leadership and program management positions, but we utilize them for merit review of competitive proposals as well as our performance assessment activities. Now, while this enables fresh ideas regarding scientific research and the management of the agency, it does bring with it some challenges in terms of managing a blended workforce. When you factor in the increased reliance on contractors to perform many administrative functions, managing the NSF workforce can be challenging. The good news is we have a very collegial culture, and the career federal employees at NSF provide mentoring support and, most importantly, stability to the agency's operations. One of the things that we try to do is we both try and engage the contractors and temporary staff as part of the NSF family. At the same time, we work closely to establish a strong core among the career executives and staff because it's important for the contractors and temporary workers to hear and for the messages to be reinforced as to what's important to the foundation. And so we find that it's the permanent staff that allow us to do that. We have a very dedicated and committed staff, and they really make it possible for this rotation of temporary workers to come in and out and still allow the business of the foundation to continue.
As you know, Anthony, the younger employees have different attitudes, behaviors, and expectations for their careers and the workplace. In general, they tend to be more flexible and more mobile, and therefore we expect them to change employers and jobs several times. They also typically look for more flexibility from their employers and greater support at the workplace. Could you tell our listeners about the National Science Foundation's efforts to meet the challenge of this changing workforce?
In part, I think we're meeting the needs of this group by expanding our use of the Federal Career Intern Program as well as the Presidential Management Fellows Program. In addition, as you know, we're widely recognized as one of the great places to work in the federal government, and we offer many amenities such as an on-site fitness center, an on-site child care center, on-site health services, on-site cafe, library services, and proximity to a shopping mall. We also offer detailed assignments that offer interesting developmental opportunities for our employees. For the last 6 years, the number of telework agreements on file at the foundation have increased, and telework is clearly one of those areas that's appealing to employees of all ages. That said, NSF is in a somewhat unique position because for many of the positions we try and fill, the requirements greatly limit our pool and our opportunities to go after some of the younger employees, and that a PhD with 6 years of experience after attaining it is often a requirement for many of our program management positions. And so we look to leverage as best we can the opportunities to attract younger employees for those positions that they would qualify for.
The NSF is also a co-managing partner and a consortium leader for the grants management line of business, and you recently launched a web portal called research.gov. Could you tell us about this specific effort and to what extent does your office support systems necessary to manage the foundation's grant-making process?
Certainly. NSF is a single-mission agency that fulfills that mission by issuing grants, so it's critical that our IT investments support and enable those business processes. Research.gov is a new initiative that supports the grant-making process by providing a menu of services tailored to the needs of the research community and enables NSF to comply with recent government-wide mandates and guidelines. We were selected by OMB to lead the Research-Focused Grants Management Consortium because of our successful track record with our existing grants management system, Fastlane, our leadership position in the research community, and our high standards and performance for our customers. Research.gov allows us to leverage Fastlane's capabilities to deliver common grants management services and allows us to serve as a lead partner for federal research-oriented grant-making agencies with a shared vision of increasing customer service for the research community while streamlining and standardizing business processes among the partner agencies. Research.gov provides public-facing services for the broader research community and business services for institutions that apply for and receive grants from participating federal research agencies. The first of many business services that we offer is grants application status, and we recently released this in a beta mode. It will allow applicants to check the status of grant applications submitted to NSF and any of its research.gov partners in one single location. As this initiative matures, research.gov will continue to develop and implement additional services in support of the science, engineering, research, and education mission.
Anthony, in the past year, we've seen a surge of federal agencies and a variety of communities launching their own version of a Wikipedia or a blog. Could you talk about efforts within NSF to leverage these new social networking ideas and technologies, such as blogs and wikis? And specifically from perhaps your vantage point, how can such tools enhance NSF's ability to collaborate and communicate?
NSF has several methods by which we interact with our communities, both internal and external. There is active interest among our scientists and engineers to explore and use various collaboration tools, and our connection with the academic community keeps us on the constant lookout for the latest technologies. Regarding wiki technology, we launched the first NSF wiki in 2005, and it has been in agency-wide use for over the last 2 or 3 years. Currently, we have about 20 distinct groups that use the NSF wiki for a variety of purposes, such as project updates, meeting minutes, notices of interest, and posting and updating standard operating procedures. Right now, we're exploring the development of a wiki that can be used for both internal staff and their external communities for collaboration. All of these tools can help NSF to better communicate and collaborate. We also have the luxury internally of being located in one location, which facilitates a lot more face-to-face collaboration, which is not always an option for some other organization.
So let me switch subjects here for a moment. A major cybersecurity concern within the federal government these days is employees perhaps not thinking about the risks and being careless about personal information and data security. What steps have you taken to create or cultivate a culture of accountability and protection for sensitive personal information?
We strive to balance security and privacy considerations such as the protection of personal information and data with the open and collaborative environment that's central to the scientific research and discovery. User education, we think, is the critical success factor in maintaining this appropriate balance. Our key message establishes accountability. Each employee is responsible for recognizing personal information and avoiding inappropriate access, use, or disclosure. We hold annual security awareness training, which is required of all employees and other on-site staff. We also hold ongoing outreach activities to remind employees of their responsibilities with respect to protection of personal information. Keeping users informed is just one component of NSF's security and privacy strategy. NSF's information systems are designed to facilitate work processes while providing appropriate levels of protection for security information, which is not a trivial task given that we receive 42,000 proposals each year for research, education, and training projects, and we receive several thousand applications annually for graduate and postdoctoral fellowships. One of the things that we've done recently, in 2007, we stopped collecting Social Security numbers from individuals that conduct business with the foundation and assigned unique NSF IDs to replace those SSNs for all individual accounts in our grants management system, and this constituted over 350,000 records. We also implement other technical controls such as data encryption and secure access mechanisms that are employed where appropriate to provide additional layers of protection for sensitive personal information. Finally, our security and privacy program could not be successful without the involvement and dedication of senior management, particularly the director and the deputy director. When senior leadership makes it clear that security and privacy are priorities, then the foundation listens.
That's great. So what does the future hold for the National Science Foundation? We will ask Anthony Arnley, Director of the Office of Information and Resource Management and Chief Human Capital Officer at the Foundation, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.